Welcome to the Public Handicapper Podcast. This podcast covers the four races run every weekend on publichandicapper.com. This is show number 30, September 27th, 2019. I'm Scott Carson, founder of Public Handicapper, and I'm joined by my co-host, Hall of Fame handicapper, Chris Larmy. Chris, what's the word?
The word is there's a cold front moving through the Pacific Northwest this weekend, and it's supposed to get really chilly in a few days. So fall is definitely in the air.
All right. Well, it's going to be 82 at Belmont tomorrow for the Jockey Club Gold Cup. So I'm enjoying the last remaining warm days. We also have a special guest today, live bankroll tournament pro, Tony the Terminator Zoe. Tony, how are you today?
I'm great. Thanks for the intro, Scott. I'm happy to be on. Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, we have a few questions for you, Tony, as I'm sure our listeners do as well. Chris, do you want to start with a question first?
Yeah, I have several questions for Tony. I know Tony is what some of the listeners are probably the traditional handicappers who use either paper or online tools and make their own decisions. But Tony, I know you're really a quant guy and you have computer models. So I thought you'd tell us a little bit about your approach and how you use computer models to play the races and also to come up with selections in live bankroll contests.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, like you mentioned, I definitely take more of a quantitative approach to the game, although I would say I'm not 100% quant-driven because there are instances where I know the model's pretty weak and it's very difficult to put that into the model directly. But I would say I'm like 80% systematic quantitative-driven and 20% what you call, feel or experience, right? So, you know, I started this game purely quant-driven, but over time, as I play the races, I get to see spots where I think the model is wrong and adjust accordingly because it's not always right. But the whole point of quant, these models is kind of to make your decision making very systematic, you know, no biases, no noise. A lot of times, you know, horse players would have a horse, go into race, and all of a sudden change their pick the last second and horse will win or something like that. We've all encountered that. I'm trying to take that emotion inconsistently out of the game so my process is completely reputable. So I guess I take I work during the day, I work at hedge funds, so I take a very institutionalized view of gambling and I try to apply to horses also. So, you know, I'm model driven, but sometimes there are instances where I do kind of override it.
Tony, are you always tweaking the model?
Absolutely. So some of the things where there were big overlays, you know, 2 to 3 years ago are no longer there. Or in some cases, it's been so baked in the price, I'll bet the other way. So if you don't consistently improve your model, you're just going to die away because those edges are going to be found by other people. Because as you bet them, that information leaks into the market. People pick up on it, start betting that edge. So it's a constant kind of cat and mouse game where you're trying to stay just a few steps ahead. So yeah, constantly tweaking. I mean, if I see something grossly wrong, I'll do a deep dive. But the models, you know, work in the background and constantly changing how important this variable is, this variable gets value, what days are at best, the weather conditions can matter. There's so many variables to go in. There's no one silver bullet. It's a collection of many, many, many things added up.
So is this a black box machine learning model or models, or are they models where you develop the algorithms and then back test them and use them? I mean, what's your you know, technical approach to it?
Yeah, so for live betting, like day-to-day betting, it's completely automated. Very little human decision-making. Only on kind of big days when I expect high volume do I ever even look at the output, partially to kind of learn, and partially because those are days where if you make a big mistake, it can cost you. But tournaments, you know, is slightly different. Well, maybe it's largely different in the case that I have to blend kind of that systematic, you know, a maximize your ROI approach that I do in automated betting with the kind of the game theory, right? Because in tournaments, sometimes you're not trying to maximize ROI. Sometimes you're trying to maximize, you know, your correlation to the field, or maximize your expected, you know, prize payout or something like that. So day-to-day betting, black box, you know, just grind away. But in kind of tournament betting, there are situations where I'll bet underlay because I don't think it'll be covered, or I think a horse is taking too much money, so I'm gonna block it. Or if I'm behind, I want to take a horse that no one has covered, I don't think. So it depends. If it's day-to-day versus tournaments, it's gonna be different strategies.
So the other question I had is, are they handicapping models that actually, you know, build odds lines or something similar and then bet into that? Or are you looking at just purely analytically looking at the pools and looking for inefficiencies between different pools, or a combination of the two?
Combination of two. So obviously it's very, very important to get an odds line. I'm not betting the horse, I'm betting the price, right? So I have no allegiance to any horse. When obviously as a fan, I do have allegiance to certain horses, but as a gambler, all I care about is price. You know, I think I spoke to Scott about this, but you know, I'll bet, you know, a claimer to beat American Pharoah if I get the right odds, right? So it's purely price driven, and because it's purely price driven, I need to get a handle on what the fair odds should be. You know, the night before I have a rough fair odds, but there's a lot of information in the pools. You know, how the money flows into pools, to which pools, and that line movement sharpens my line. So you know, I might go in loving a horse at a certain price, but because I see certain movements in certain pools, I might decide, you know, something's up and either decrease the bet or even bet the other way. So it's a very fluid process. I don't go in saying I will bet this combination with this horse. It's really, you know, these horses are the ones I think there may be opportunities, and if the opportunities come up and to which degree, I'll size my bet up and down. So yeah, it's a combination of both.
So I think you don't ever fall in love with a horse. You may fall in love with a bet, but it's purely the price versus, you know, your analysis of the race. I had one other question on the betting. In sizing your bets, do you use like, you know, Kelly criterion sort of approach, or to figure out how much you're going to bet based on the edge and the odds of the horse, or do you have some other way of sizing those bets?
Yeah, so I'd say it's a blend. When I first started, you know, I did fractional Kelly because Kelly can be too volatile. But as I get bigger, I'm more constrained by the liquidity in the pools. So, you know, right now I'm just maximizing what's called the risk-adjusted return. So I'm not necessarily maximizing my ROI because I rather have lower ROI on much bigger handle than the highest ROI on small handle, right? Because the first X amount of money, you're going to be betting your best ideas, right? And then to get to big size, you're going to have to bet smaller overlays, right? So I'm not in the game of maximizing ROI. I'm in the game of maximizing the dollars won over my risk of ruin or over the volatility in my bankroll, right? So yeah, it's a blend of the two.
Right. So you want to maximize your return on, you know, the amount of money you can make over time versus how much you make percentage-wise on every bet you make.
Yes, maximize dollars, but the risk part's important, right? There's certain circumstances where I'll bet a horse that is what I think is flat edge or slightly negative edge if it can drastically reduce my P&L curve, my volatility curve. So I take a very staunch look at the risk. So I'm more important about, like, you know, how much money I can lose versus what my potential gains are. So I'm trying to balance that risk-reward.
All right, I know Scott's saying, Chris, quit asking questions. You got to get to the races. So
no. I actually just have my own questions.
Okay, just one other question, then I won't ask any more. Are there certain types of pools or races or tracks that you found to be you're more successful in than others? And would you be willing to share any of that with the listeners?
Yeah, this is something funny because when I talk to you know, some of my friends who are pro gamblers and in horse racing, most computer driven players typically do well in the super exotic pools, right? Especially in tries and supers. I found my biggest success to be mainly in the vanilla pools. The win pools, the doubles, the exactas. I think the reason for that is because those are visit pools, I have more data and I can get a better grasp of what works. I mean, I've been doing a lot of work in the kind of the hidden pools. I just don't have enough time to dedicate to that with my day job to really take an effort on that. But at the moment, it's the visible pools. Win, play, show, doubles, exactas. I've been trying to work on the, pick three, pick four, those type of pools. But I wouldn't say, those are my bread and butter, which is different because the classic profile of computer better is the exotic pools, slamming bunch of combinations. Mine isn't. Mine's more like I find an overlay and try to maximize my dollars won through that overlay by spreading my liquidity across all pools. So if I have a key horse, I'll bet it to win, I'll bet in exactas, I'll bet in doubles, I'll bet it in everything, just keying off that one horse. So that's my style. It's a little bit different, but it works for me.
Tony, let's say when you were talking before, as you're watching the odds and you said, if I notice something's up, I might change my bet. What's an example of something being up? Let's say there's a horse that you're thinking that you're going to go with. What kind of, what kind of betting activity could cause you to say, I'm going to move my money over here and why?
Yeah. So, I'll give two styles of examples, right? The first one is the night before when I analyze the card, I always try to see, okay, what the morning line is. So obviously, the morning line is not an important variable, but it's something that you should definitely take a look at because the public's going to key off those numbers, right? It's almost an anchoring point, right? So look at the morning line and I say, okay, do I think this horse is going to drift up or drift down from that morning line? And there's going to be reasons why. Right. The biggest factors most people use are things like, speed, pace, class, form. And if this horse moves off the morning line in a way that correlates with those variables, then okay, it makes sense. But if the horse is taking money because of a reason that's not very apparent, that's not obvious, then I take a deeper look. And that's a horse I might, change my opinion on the day of, depending on the quote, because the money does not lie. Right.
So you're more likely to bet the horse then if you notice that unusual activity.
Correct. Correct. I typically, if I see a horse where I think should drift up for some reason, it's taking a load of money. I know someone out there is putting a lot of money on there on info that is not apparent to the public. And I'm just going to ride that. It's kind of like the whole steam bet theory in sports betting. But the understanding is, you want to make sure the steam bet is coming from smart money and not dumb money, and how that money comes in. How does it come in big chunks? Is it coming early, mid, late? Does it come in certain pools? All that kind of provides me an answer of like, is this smart money and dumb money? And if I believe the horse taking money for not obvious reasons and it has characters of smart money, then I will follow, right? Then I will just ride that momentum.
So that smart money, let me ask you a couple questions about that. If the money comes in early or the money comes in the middle or the money comes in late, where do you see the smart money based on your analysis? Does it typically come in early, middle, late? How do you differentiate?
Typically, not always. It depends on the track and stuff like that. But it depends on the pool also. But typically, this is a generalized statement, is early and late is smart, right? Early is probably people who are betting the horse regardless of price. Late is typically, your... systematic quantitative bettors like the slam towards a later point, and the mid is typically people at the track or whatever going up to make their bets, right? That's typically dumber money, and also kind of how to spread out, right? If it's one big clip versus spreading out, because typically smart bettors like to spread out their money you know, smoothly, so they don't, you know, reveal their hand or reduce market impact, so, and spread across pools. So yeah, I want confirmation in, you know, different pools. It's a bunch of little things. I don't want to give a generalized statement, but that's typically what it is. Early and late, typically, is going to be smarter than mid.
Okay, and I have a question specifically about the Woodbine contest.
Yeah.
In that contest, you told me, you know, we were playing one track, so you knew all the races that were going to be played, and you planned for the last race. You told me that you needed to build some bankroll so you could push in on a horse that figured to be about the favorite and did end up being the favorite at 5-2. So the question I have is, far ahead of time, did you just, with your model, figure out that at that price, he was going to be an overlay based on your metrics?
Yeah, I mean, I thought that the horse was... I mean, I thought the horse was going to be favored, but I also thought that he was not going to take too much money because there's a lot of speed in there. I think people might spread money on the speed. And, you know, I also try to be cognizant of the fact that I will be putting money on the horse, right? Because I might end up being, you know, 20% of the win pool. So I try to figure out how my bet size is going to impact the pool. So just getting a handle on, like, how much money is typically bet in that those type of races on big days, and trying to find out how much I need to get to the total I need. And it was funny that day because the total was kind of low, so I went in with much more than I thought I would do. So yeah, so I try to plan for that race. Obviously, I need to build a bankroll during the day. I had good opinion mid card and one earlies, and luckily two out of those three hit, and I got a decent bankroll. But yeah, I'm always trying to plan out the whole date in advance so there's no surprises, right? But sometimes I do have a surprise. Sometimes my horse scratches, or the horse takes money in a weird way, or I don't have enough money left. And that's a bad situation to be in. So I try to go into the last race, on my opinion, with enough bank to ensure a win. And sometimes it happens, sometimes it doesn't, right?
All right, and a final question, and you don't have to answer this if you think you're giving too much away. But going into that last race, you said that you noticed the six or
nine.
Yeah, the nine. You noticed the nine was getting a certain type of it was getting some money. Now you told me that you had three horses covered in that race. Why didn't, if you noticed unusual betting activity on the nine, why didn't you jump on that to try to ride that one as one of your top three?
Yeah, so I was constrained by bankroll, right? So I needed to make sure I had enough money on the one, right, to ensure a win. And I thought that would take something like $17,000, $18,000, right? By betting my $5,000 on that horse, I was left with another, you know, $3,000 to $4,000 spread across two tickets. So that's also a handicap, right? So I can't put that entire amount on one horse. The main reason being, if I was in the lead, I would cover that horse, right? But because I'm behind, I would have to put too much money on that horse in order to leapfrog whoever else had money on the horse, right? So, like, I didn't know if it was in the room, but typically in a race like that, last race of the card, right after, big stakes, people are leaving, it's probably in the room, right? Like, it's probably us, you know, whatever, 30, 40 players in the room hammering that pool, right? So, when I saw money flying in a double pool, that's dangerous, right? Because there was a long shot hit in the previous race. Then I saw money in the win pool. They were taking 30 to 60% more than I expect from my model. So I know something was up. Like, there was some, like, sharp action on that horse. So when I'm behind, I can't cover. I don't have enough bankroll. And plus, I don't have the necessary padding to leapfrog anyone with that horse. So in a situation where I'm behind, I have to pass that horse, because I know if I hit that horse, I don't know why I can win, right? Because there's so much money on it. So I'm not sure if that makes sense, but like, if I'm ahead, I will.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But if I'm behind, I want to be on the court. I want to make sure I take a horse and no one else has, you know?
Right. And I just had a follow-up directly to that race. Paul Sherman, who won the contest, just in case his horse finished second, he had exactas, which would also get him near the winning total. Did it just not occur to you that maybe you could play an exacta? I mean, let's say you had a $600 exacta with the 9-1. You know, $600, that's within your bankroll, right? I mean, like that could have been on like your bad ticket. And just in case that horse did win, couldn't the exacta have gotten you there?
Yeah, so there's two reasons for that, right? Number one is the volatility and the exacta payouts are very uncertain. So me putting X amount on exacta, I'm not sure I'll be able to keep that price, right? So then number one is I don't know how much I need on that exacta because my money on the exacta and others at the last clip might severely impact the payout and I might not be able to get the total I need, right? Number right. two, I know I say I don't look at value in tournaments as much, but I'm still a value player. And the exacta takeout at Woodbine is massive compared to the win takeout. So the win and double takeout at Woodbine is some of the lowest across, you know, the nation, right? Well, I mean, the North America, it's like 15, roughly 50%. The exacta are in, you know, I think it's 22 or 24. So even there, the 9% spread, I just, you know, didn't want to eat that takeout. So okay. There's kind of two areas for that. Why I did not bet exactas there. There's certain tracks I would play the more exotic pools. But my whole plan is I try to get the last race where I can win with a big win bet. If I have to go to exact pools because of small bankroll, then I will do it. But I prefer clean win bets because, you know, things can happen in these exotics, right? Like some weird stuff can happen. So I either in an odds movement or how the races run. So I just prefer to get there. And when I got there with enough total to win it with a win bet, that's what I did. I did huge win bets.
All right. Chris, you had a follow-up?
This is more general, not just for that contest, but the smart money in the doubles versus the win pool. So you see the will pays, and all of a sudden the horse is getting a lot more money in the win pool than you would expect based on the will pays. Is that smart money, or was the double pool the smart money, or does it depend? You know, how do you approach that?
Yeah, so I'm less concerned about like which pool is smarter. In this case, the doubles pool is pretty smart because the previous race was a long shot, right? Typically, if the previous race was a favorite, I don't put much credence on the flows in double pools, right? Because typically the public's going to land on kind of favorite type combinations. But when there's a combination of a long shot, two favorites, I pay more attention because typically that means someone need to have bet the long shot in the previous race to get this current race. And that money is typically a bit smarter. But generally, I don't really compare the odds between pools. I more compare it about how the horse is taking money in the doubles and win pools against what my model thinks that horse should be taking in each pool. So it doesn't make sense. Less about the between pools, but more about how the pools act versus my model.
All right. Well, okay. Great. I really appreciate your, you know, sharing some of the way you approach the race, just because I know your approach is probably different than most of the listeners, but I think they can all learn a lot from the way you approach it, especially like you said about sort of taking the emotion out of the decision making and not falling in love with horses, but really focusing on the price and value and sort of your long term returns.
Yeah. Like I said, I'm betting the price. I'm not betting the horse. I will bet any horse at the right price.
The Public Handicapper Podcast is brought to you by DRF Bets. Did you know DRF Bets now has weekly cash back of up to 5% of your wagers? It's also the only wagering platform that allows you to build and submit ticket maker plays. And you can get free PPs just by betting. Sign up now with a deposit of $150 and get another $150 to bet the very next day. To take advantage of this offer, go to publichandicapper.com and click on the DRF Bets banner at the top. It's the only way we get credit for having sent you there, and we need the credit.
Great conversation, and thanks a lot for sharing all that with us, Tony. We're going to start with the races now, and we'll start with the seventh race at Laurel. It's the Japan Turf Cup Stakes. It's a mile and a half on turf, and I'd like to know like where they came up with the name of that race, since it's in Maryland. The purse is $100,000 for 3-year-olds and up. And Tony, since you are our guest, we'll let you start with any opinion that you can share on this race.
Sure. So, you know, out of the races we're going to cover, I think this is probably, if I had to choose between these five, this is probably the race I would bet. So, I mean, to my model, it looks like a pretty competitive field. There's no real standouts. So in a situation like this, the public can get confused and can make mistakes. So if you go down, so I'm going to start with overall race thoughts and I'll go down individual horses. So let's start with a favorite. So the More Than Life favorite is a 7-2 number two horse Postulation. So I think that 7-2 More Than Life is a bad price. But on the flip side, I also think that horse should drift up in odds. So depending how high it drifts up, I have a fair line around, you know, 5.5 to 6 to 1. If it gets there, then I'll bet it. But at that 7 to 2, I'm going to be betting against. Some potential plays here. I do like the 6 Nakamura 8 to 1, but I just think that morning line is bad. There's no way it's going to go off 8 to 1. I think it's going to drift down heavily. You know, even might it might even, you know, fight for favoritism in my view. I have a fair odds line around 9-2, so if it gets around there, I will be playing that horse. The number 8, O Dionysus, the 8-1 morning line. I think it should drift up. So I think if it gets, if it drifts up to roughly 11-1, I think it's a play. The 9, Lemon Zip, it's, you know, 15-1 morning line. My fair odds are right about there. You know, the problem is I think this horse might take money. So if it gets bet down, then I'll pass. But if it sticks, I will bet it. So that's kind of my views on the race.
Great. Chris, what do you think?
Well, we've talked about the God of Wine on this show a few times, O Dionysus. And that's, I think that horse stands out in here from a value standpoint. I'll be all over this horse if he's any, if he's 8-1. I love it if he drifts up, although I might knock him back down if he drifts above that 8-1 line. I think he's the bet of the day of the four races we're talking about. So, and I agree with Tony, though, that this race is pretty wide open. The favorites will be underlays. And I like these kinds of races, especially when there's a horse like O Dionysus that I can key on. Because then I can throw in some of these other horses that'll be big prices. And it's sometimes it's hard to predict which ones will float up at 20 or 30 to 1. But a few of these horses that all are about the same will be big prices. And if you can hook up one of those or two of those with, you know, O Dionysus in exactas or even trifectas, you could make a big score in this race. So, you know, I'm all about the 8 horse in here.
Well, I'm going to. We've been on this horse before, and we're going to be on him again together tomorrow. and he may disappoint us, but there are a few reasons why I really like the horse. One is that he on SpeedFigs, he is the fastest horse in the race, so he's going to get some betting there regardless. However, his best race this year could have been the mile and a half race at Delaware that he ran, where he was 4 wide on both turns, and I think he's still dead heated for third. And that's kind of a hidden race. So if you look at his past performances, he hasn't won in a long time. He hasn't won since last year. So I think he will drift up above that 8-1. But he's not only the fastest, he also comes off a little bit of a trouble trip where he stumbled at the start and was a little keen on the first turn. And the other reason that I like him is he's got a new jockey, and he was being ridden by Alex Citron. And I mean, there was no denying that jockey was responsible for the horse running 4 wide on both turns, all 3 turns, or, you know, I don't know if it was all 3, but it was at least 2 of the turns in that mile and a half race at Delaware. So this new jockey in his last race brought him to the rail and had him, you know, in back. So I think he cares more about keeping the horse inside, and the horse proved that he actually could run inside. He didn't win the race, but he didn't run a bad race. And considering that he stumbled at the start, that's a little, you know, that the ability to get the inside trip, which I've questioned on the horse before. Now I'm convinced that he actually can do it, and I'm assuming that this jockey is going to do something to save ground and therefore ride that horse to the winner's circle.
Yeah, I think it's key that he can't have a really wide trip again. So, I do think the field should be strung out some early, and he can get over if the rider wants to save some ground. I think he can do it. The other thing that I'll mention on here is I really like the work pattern since his last race. His work two back was his fastest work he's had in quite a while, and then they gave him this sort of long, slow mile workout to get ready for this mile and a half race, and he has run well at this distance before. So I think there's a lot of positives with O'Dionysus, and like you said, we'll probably ride him together in here, and maybe this is the time where we can cash in, knowing that he's better than the results would show so far this year.
We can only hope. All right, well, let's go to the next race. That's a public handicapper race. It's the Pilgrim Stakes, the ninth race from Belmont. It's a mile and a 16th on the turf. Purse of $200,000 for two-year-olds. Chris, why don't we let you start this one?
Okay, these races are really tough, these two-year-old route stakes races, because most of the horses are so underexposed. You don't really know what they're capable of doing. You're guessing at a lot of it. The one thing you have going for you is the connections tend to get over bet. So in this race, number two, No Word, and number seven, Struck Door, those two horses certainly could win, but they're likely to get wildly over bet. So I'm trying to get beyond those horses. And you can make a case for a lot of these, but where I landed was with Famished, who only has, you know, a dirt sprint. He hasn't routed, he hasn't gone on the turf, but he's really bred to do both really well. And what I like is they've worked him a couple times on the turf before this, and his first turf work was really good. So it told them that looks like he can run to his breeding on turf. And he had a little bit of trouble in his last race and still ran well and in a really good race, I thought. And his last race was a sprint on the dirt, but it was 7 furlongs, so it's not that big of a stretch out here. So, you know, there's a lot of newness with this horse, so you want to demand a price. But if you get the price, if they overbet Struck Door and No Word, you know, I think Famished could be a play in here, but it all depends on how the race gets bet. And there's a couple other live long shots in here, I think. But that's my main opinion, Famished.
I will say that I'm interested in Famished as well, but figuring that he's going to get bet at least to a 6-1 morning line. And currently on Public Handicapper, he is 4-1. So he is getting bet there. Tony, how did you see this race?
Yeah, so the profile race for me is one where I'm just hoping for a decent price on the best horses. So, you know, I agree with you guys that it's all around the 7 Structor and 2 No Word. If I can get anywhere near the morning line, I'll be playing those horses. Well, I mean, I'm probably not going to play this race, but if I had to play the race, I'd play one of those two horses. I believe all the other horses are poor value versus morning line. I hope that the public spreads on mid price and long shot so I can get the square value in the favorites. So kind of summarizing, the only two horses that interest me, hopefully I get the best price, are the two logical, Structure and No Word.
Wow. Well, that's a really interesting take. And for purposes of our contest, since it's Mythical win place in the Public Handicapper Challenge, we're looking at it a little bit differently. So Chris and I really don't have an option to pick one of those horses. I'm going to go with a horse that I think is going to be at least 10-1, and that is Andesite, who improved a little bit from first race to second. But the most important thing is in his second race, he was 3 wide behind a slow pace, and it was a race where the horse in question not only set a slow pace, but won the race. And I use these figures from racingflow.com that come up with a closer favorability rating. And any horse that was closing in that race, it gets an upgrade from those folks at racingflow.com, because the closer favorability rating, or CFR rating, was 1 on a scale of 1 to 100. So it was the absolute worst. They use a computer model as well as the day's racing to determine what the closer favorability rating was. And that was the worst possible closer favorability rating. So even though there are several horses in that race and they're all upgrades, that doesn't necessarily, you know, they can't all win. Only one of them can win. But that combined with the small improvement from race one to race two is the reason for me choosing the horse. And he is slower than the other horses, which is why he will get, you know, he will drift up 10 to 1 or higher, I think. The and in that way, the value that I'm getting out of the race is that not only the slight improvement, but also the conditions of the last race won't be that apparent to everybody who's betting it, because not that many people use those figures.
Yeah, I can see that case. The other horse I like in here, and if they bet the race like they're doing on Public Handicapper, this might be the horse I would play, is kind of the opposite case, and that's Tuggle, who I think, you know, he's bred top and bottom to rout on turf, but he tried routing on turf in his last start and just had a brutal trip. He got off to bad start. You know, he just did not run a lick. And so, you know, you can interpret that two ways. One is, even though he's bred to like routing on turf, he doesn't. And I think that's how most people will see this. You know, he had his try, he flopped, we're just going to toss him out. But to me, he's the speed in this race. And if he breaks alertly from the rail, he could clear and they may just let him go and he may never look back. So if he doesn't get bet, you know, if they discount him off that last race, I'm always interested in a horse I think can clear early in a two-year-old race. And so, you know, he may be, you know, the play in here if they bet Famished Down. So those are the two, you know, I'm probably interested in.
You know, Scott and Chris, I think it's actually quite interesting that you both mentioned Andesite and Tuggle. When I mentioned on the prices I would fade, those are the two that I will not directly fade, and I'll look at the price. So on my line, at least, I see Andesite taking money, and I see Tuggle drifting up. So, you know, if I get, you know, that 10 to 1 Andesite clear bet, and if I do get a drift off the Tuggle to, like, you know, the low teen odds, then the bet. But for the other horse, the 6, 8, 5, 9, 4, I'm literally just going to completely throw out if I was playing this race.
Okay. Well, good to know that our horse at least gets my horse and Chris's horse get some consideration.
Hey, we have a special offer for PH Podcast listeners from RacingFlow.com. Purchase a 2-month subscription to Racing Flow for $140 total. Get an extra 2 months for free. That works out to $35 per month. Make sure you mention the Public Handicapper Pod in order to get the 2 free months. Go to RacingFlow.com and sign up now.
All right, so let's move on to the 10th at Belmont. It's the Jockey Club Gold Cup. This is not a Public Handicapper race, but naturally it's a pretty major race, so we're going to cover it. It's 1.25 miles on dirt, $750,000 for 3-year-olds and up. And we'll see. What do you think here in this race, Tony?
I think this is one of those races what I call battle for favoritism, right? So I like Preservationalist, the number 4 horse, best. If I get that 8-5 morning line, then, you know, I will back that horse. You know, I think with Code Honor in there and Tacitus, maybe I might get that price. I'm not sure. Like I said, 5-horse field, tough extract value. But, you know, if I had to back a horse, it would be the 4 Preservationalist.
All right. Chris, where do you stand?
Well, I seriously doubt I'll bet this race, but I'm sort of on the opposite end. The horse I would fade is Preservationist. I think he doesn't have upside. I think he's going to get over bet, and he's giving weight to the three-year-olds, and he ran a big race, and to me, you know, he was very game his last race, but that was just a bad race for the level, and he just happened to be the best of a bad bunch, I thought, and I think he's tailing off a little bit. He has a history of physical problems. You know, to me, he's just, of the four, the least reliable in here. He may have a tactical advantage, which at a mile and a quarter, I'm not sure is a big deal in a small field, but you know, he does have that, but I think he's the one I'd fade. And I've always been a Tacitus fan, and I just think he's had just some horrifically bad rides, a whole string of them. And in a four-horse field from the rail, I think, and Jose Ortiz is a good rider. He owes this horse a good ride, and I think if he gives the horse a good ride, he's going to dominate this race. So to me, if I had to pick a winner, it would be Tacitus. And if I had to play the race, I would fade Preservationist. I assume Code of Honor will be over bet, and the time to play him was last time. And I would play a Tacitus over Vino Rosso Exacta. I think Vino Rosso is primed to run a good race. He skipped the last start. I think he's just as fast as Preservationist. He has upside, and he's more likely to run well in here, I think, than Preservationist. And so that's how I'd play it. 1-3 Exacta is the way I'd play the race.
All right. Well, I'm definitely interested in Vino Rosso. I liked him in his last race, which he scratched from. I'm a little concerned that they chose to do that, because I figured he was primed and ready then, and why wait a whole nother month? But they did, and the pattern, the figures are still the same, and the workouts are still solid. I think he's the most likely winner of the race. He's faster than the three-year-olds. Now they could improve, and Tacitus is going to have a breakthrough race one of these times, but maybe I choose him in his next race. So to me, at 7-2, Vino Rosso is a clear value. If I, you know, I don't have a computer model for my value, but in my mental model, Vino Rosso is a slam dunk bet if he's actually 7-2. Now, I was tweeted at by Garrett Skiba, who said that the takeout of, I think it's 16.5%. with that small field made the race non-bettable at all. And I was just wondering, Tony, if you would agree with that. I mean, doesn't it seem, I would think that there's at some price, if the horse you think is surely going to win, there's got to be a price where it's beating the takeout.
I think I have to side Skiba here. I mean, this is not a race I would plow any significant amount of money into. It's really a four horse race, right? That five Olympic Village is, you know, I don't know. I don't want to knock the horse, but I don't think it belongs. But yeah, it's tough to extract value. I mean, you can see it here, right? We're all on different horses. You know, the money's going to flow pretty evenly. You know, break is going to affect you. Yeah, it's not a bettable race for me, but if I had to pick again, it'll be the four. It's interesting that we're all on different horses, so it'll be kind of interesting to see how money flows on this race, right?
But, I mean, the question is, he's probably not going to be higher than 7-2, and he's more likely, I think, to even be 3-1, because people still have Vino. Who doesn't like Vino Rosso? But, you know, let's say that something crazy happened, and they just went nuts on Code of Honor because John Velasquez chose Code of Honor, or was committed to Code of Honor, and got off Vino Rosso. Let's say he actually goes in there, goes off at 6-1 or higher than that. And you're thinking it's a great value even at 7-2. I mean, I understand that you wouldn't want to bet this race, but there's always, when you have a tremendous overlay like that, to me, that's when I would want to be increasing my bets. If he ticked up to 4-1 to 5-1, I'd just keep on adding more money into the win pool.
Yeah. I mean, if he goes off 6-1, then clearly that's going to be a great bet. And, you know, if the public slams those three favorites, the 4-2-1, and Vino Rosso goes off at a big price, that's going to be great. You know, I think Vino Rosso is going to be covered a lot underneath, you know, in some of these actives and tries. It's even tries offered in this race. I don't know in this field. So
I think there will be a try if there's five horses.
Yeah, it's just, you know, this is not a race where you would even bet a try, right, in this field, right? The takeouts can eat any advantage you have. So you're left really with the win bet. Or, you know, you have this one of your favorite horses keyed in, you know, multi-race wagers or something. But I don't know. I'm having a hard time trying to extract money out of this race. I think there are easier spots. This is just a tough spot to try to take money out of. So. But if you have a key opinion on Vino Rosso and you key that horse, you're going to get paid, right? So, I'm not sure. I don't know about the race.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
Just one other comment on Vino Rosso, though. I think the rider switch is really positive because I think them figured out what to do with this horse. And I think his best style is to sit and finish. And I think and save ground and then just sit and finish. And that's exactly what Irad Ortiz will do. So I think that will work in his favor. Velasquez, you know, he's a, you know, great rider, Hall of Fame rider, but he doesn't value saving ground, especially later in his career. And I think Vino Rosso, that can make a big difference if they can put him on the rail and just let him finish up strong at the end. And for a while there this year, they were trying to put him up closer to the pace. And I think he's going to be a better horse if they just let him sit back and dead last and then make a run, or he and Code of Honor sitting off and making a run.
Yeah, when he ran in the Gold Cup at Santa Anita, the mile and a quarter race, he was wide almost the entire race and very close to that pace. And I thought, no way this horse is going to win the race. And he still won the race despite running that way. So if he can sit that chilly trip and save everything for the end and you know, not spend a lot of effort going 2-3 wide, it could be like a breakthrough performance for him tomorrow.
Yeah, right. We'll see. I think what we've all concluded, except for you maybe, Scott, is that this will be an interesting race to watch, but maybe not a great betting opportunity. So,
yeah, just because I've been waiting for Vino Rosso and the fact that there's only three other horses that can beat him, and they're all going to take more money than they should. To me, it's a betting opportunity, but you know, we'll have to see. I mean, at least I will be there for the race. That race will be really fun to watch. If he goes off at 3-1, though, then I'm not going to have any kind of bet on the race. All right, so let's move to our third public handicapper race. It's the seventh race at Churchill Downs. The Ack Stakes, a Grade 3 mile on the dirt, purse of $150,000 for three-year-olds and up. Chris, where did you land here?
This is an interesting race. I ended up on two horses. The one I might like a little better than the other is CZ Rocket, the three-horse, who really runs well at Churchill, has done well at this distance at Churchill before. His best race last year was second off a layoff, and they gave him a prep, obviously targeting this race, and he actually ran in this race last year. He didn't win. I think he finished fourth or third, but he was in against some better horses like Seeking the Soul. So, you know, I think he's sitting on a big race. He was pointed for this. He's fast enough to win. Calvin Burrell will probably, you know, save ground. And, you know, he's definitely the one to beat, I think, at 8-1. He could definitely be a bet. The other horse I really like in here is Unmatchable, the 9 horse, who before he ever ran, he worked 57-2 out of the gate at Keeneland, which is just smoking fast. So that was before he ever raced, and he clearly has talent given that sort of a workout. He didn't get to the races until late in his three-year-old year, so he has physical problems. But in his second start, he won impressively, going one turn mile at Churchill. And then he went on the shelf, which, again, he clearly has physical problems. But he's had a couple of starts now. his last race was probably, you know, better than it looked. He had some trouble. He still managed to win the race. And the fact that Asmussen puts him in this race, a stakes race, is a good sign, especially when he's training the favorite 8 timeline in the same race. So I really think this horse is sitting on a big race, has a lot of talent, and this is his chance to sort of step up and show that he can run in stakes company. And he's 15-1 on the morning line, and you know, you might get that. So to me, those are the two horses I'm interested in, CZ Rocket and Unmatchable.
All right, Tony, what do you think here?
Yeah, so this is a tough race for me. It's typically a race I would skip unless some sort of kind of funky odds movement happens. But kind of flip side, night races tend to be a bit less efficient. You know, I think there's more dumb money in the night races. It's kind of like if you go to play poker on a noon on Tuesday versus midnight on a Saturday, you're going to get a different crowd, right? You pros on Tuesday and you're drunk people on Saturday. So I guess this race might turn a betting race if the money gets sloppy. It's not about how good you are, but also about how bad your opponents are. So this might turn a betting race, but as it stands on the morning line, I'm pretty confused. You know, the two co-favorites, the 8 timeline, I think it might get bet a bit. You know, the public might ignore the long layoff. The number 4, Thirst for Life, I think the morning line's pretty bad. It's 3-1. I would never bet that horse at 3-1. I think it's closer to like a 5-1 horse. Horses I'm interested in, you know, the 2 Airstrike, 6 Mr. Jagermeister, the 5 Mr. Darcy. I think you might get a somewhat square price. A horse I'm heavily against is 7 Mr. Freeze. The horse that Chris mentioned, 9 Unmatchable, I do agree. You know, I think this interesting horse, you know, it's a closer into all the speed, but the problem is it has to, you know, handle that huge class jump, right? I do have this horse taking a bit of money. If I get that 15-1, good bet. I think it'll get bet down maybe like 10-1. So I'll be watching odds for that. But so this race, basically, I don't have a real opinion. I can't narrow it down too much. It really depends on the odd, but likely I'll be skipping this race as a betting race.
Well, this is a really tough race, and I doubt I'll end up betting it under any circumstance. And I'm still not even sure exactly who I'm going to land on. I have to look at a few more things. But I did agree with Chris on CZ Rocket. He's 2nd off a layoff, and his biggest win was last year at 7 furlong on this track, also 2nd off a layoff. So he completely makes sense. And if he's 8-1, and right now he's 7-1 on Public Handicapper, he's likely my pick. I'm also interested in Unmatchable for a lot of the same reasons that you mentioned. And the horse that I think is probably maybe the most likely winner is Mr. Jagermeister. He's 0-1 at the distance, but he has a 2-turn win going a mile and 70 yards. He's really on right now. He's always been fast. The only problem with him is that he's probably going to be lower than his morning line, and he's getting bet on Public Handicapper at 5-1. So for purposes of the pod and making a statement, being able to tweet out that we had it on the pod, I would also go with CZ Rocket here.
Yeah, like you said, you know, Mr. Jagermeister's dangerous speed. Tony mentioned Airstrike. You know, we've had him on the pod before. I'm just, if that morning line's right, I'm not too interested in him there. But it's a pretty wide open race. I do think that, you know, Timeline will get some money. And, you know, off that long layoff, he's definitely one you – this looks more like a prep than the target. So he's the kind – I'm willing to toss and just hope he takes some money. But you know, this is a race I could get interested in betting on the 3 or the 9 if they stay at the morning line or, you know, close to it.
Okay. Well, that brings us to our last race, last public handicapper race. It's the 9th at Churchill, the Lucas Classic Stakes, a grade 3, mile and an eighth on dirt. purse of $250,000 for three-year-olds and up. Tony, where did you land in this one?
Yeah, so I call this race a setup, what we'll call a barbell profile race, where I'm interested in either the favorites or the super long shots, depending on how the odds drift. I think the morning line, how it stands, the morning line range is too compact. I think it should be more diverse, meaning, you know, favorites get bet down more and the long shots will drift up. So if that dispersion gets too wide, then there's going to be opportunities on the long shots, you know, the one, two, and three. But if the odds dispersion stays tight or even gets tighter, then I will probably be backing, you know, Quip or the Seven Pioneered Spirit. So horses I'm against, I think, are, like I said, are the mid-price horses. So the 9 Silver Dust, which you mentioned might scratch, right? 8 Kokolkan and the 6 Tenfold. So very much a race where I'm looking to see how the favorites take money, most likely Quip and Pioneer Spirit, and then how the long shots take money, and I'll act accordingly.
So what would be a, let's say, Pioneer Spirit, who I'm very interested in, what would be a target price for you? Like, what would make you want to bet that race, that horse?
Yeah, so if I get that 5-1 morning line, I think it's square value. I just think it might tick down. You know, you might get 4-1, in which case I would pass. I think there's a chance that Quip goes off, say, 2-1 or slightly under, which case, you know, if you had to play this race, I would just take that horse. Look, it's a very much race where I'm looking at the odds, tossing the middle price horses, and looking at the favorites on long shots, for me at least.
Okay, Chris, what are you thinking here?
Well, I agree. I thought this was a really lazy morning line. I mean, you have 6-1, 5-1, 6-1, 6-1, 5-1. That's just somebody who's not bothering to try to figure out who is likely to get bet down. So I do think this morning line isn't going to be real accurate. There's a couple that are going to go way up above what their morning line is. And I think that horse is Mocito Rojo, the 10 horse. He's 20-1 on public handicapper. And this horse is just a win machine. He just wins races all over the place. And he'll get overlooked because he has low profile connections and he's been running at, you know, Lone Star and Delta and Remington. So he's going to get buried on the odds board, I think. And his speed figures are faster than the other horses in here. The jockey and trainer, in their last 17 starts, they've won 8 races as a combination. He has tactical speed. He did draw the outside, so, you know, if he gets parked wide, that's going to compromise his chances. But, you know, on public handicapper, he's 20-1. On my odds line, he's as likely to win as anybody, except for maybe Quip, although Quip it's a big question mark. I mean, he ran a total clunker last time shipping west. You know, you could just excuse that, or maybe, you know, that's a sign that he's not, you know, 100%, plus he's giving weight to other horses in the race. So, you know, I don't think he's a horse that is unbeatable by any stretch. So to me, this is definitely a race I could bet the 10 horse. I think he'll be much higher than his 5-1 morning line, and I think he has a real chance to win.
All right. Well, I agree with you on the ability of the 10. I do think that he's going to go off much closer to the morning line than he is on public handicapper right now. I may be wrong though, and therefore, as we always say, right, price is the final arbiter. So if betting happens the way we expect it to happen, and we have an opinion, we're going to bet one way. But if the horse does actually go off at 20-1, then he's some kind of wager at some, you know, the problem with this race for me is that the horses that are, it's kind of like what Tony said, the horses that are sort of logical are all kind of they have the same morning line, right? And Pioneer Spirit would be a pretty strong play for me, but at 5-1, no. And I'm personally against Quip. I'm trying to make a case, and I may just do this because outside the logical horses, I can see a capper happening in this race, and I'm trying to make a case for the 2 Blue Ridge Traveler. The reason why I like him is he got down to a pretty good figure as a 4-year-old. He was pretty fast as a 3-year-old, and he's, to me, still got some upside. And this is his 3rd off a layoff. And his first one, he went against a speed bias and closed and couldn't get up there, but it was his 1st off a layoff. And it was a racing flow, you know, closer favorability rating of 9. So he wasn't expected to do that, that well anyway. And then he wins his 2nd race back from the layoff. And I have to still watch the replay, but if he finished that with a flourish and galloped out really well, then I really like him to run the race of his life tomorrow. And it's possible that he could go off at something like 30-1. And I also think that it's entirely possible that all these fast horses like Quip, I expect to still react to his giant race 2 races ago. Mocito Rojo could also run a clunker. You know, he ran a big race 3 races ago, and he's declined. Speed figures have gotten slower since then. So it has the makings of a race to me that could just completely fall apart and have a 30-1 capper. Not sure what the odds are on public handicapper. Blue Ridge Traveler 7-1. So maybe that was a fantasy. And with Silver Dust out, all the prices are going to go down a little bit, but I think that's where I'm going to end up landing, is Blue Ridge Traveler as a bomb play, and just hope that people like the name on public handicapper and that's why they're betting it.
So you guys both said Silver Dust is scratched. That's been announced somewhere.
They said that he's likely to scratch, and they said he's like tied up. This is from the Daily Racing Forum story that came out last night.
Okay. Well, I think that helps Mocito Rojo. That's another tactical speed horse from the outside that he moves in a slot, and it's one less horse he has to get around early. So I like that scratch, although that probably will affect some of the price on everybody. But you're right. The morning line is not much of a guide to how this race will be bet, I don't think. It was a lazy morning line, I think. Watch, he'll probably end up being spot on and everybody, but this is one you definitely have to wait and see how they bet the race. But I really think, because of the connections, that the 10 horse will drift up quite a bit above his morning line. When you have horses like trained by Asmussen that ran in the Triple Crown, like Tenfold and Quip, who was on the Triple Crown trail, you know, name horses. Pioneer Spirits won a lot of races at Churchill, run well at Churchill many times. So I can't believe that the 10 will only be 5-1. But if he is, I definitely won't be betting this race.
Tony, you had a comment when you were talking about this race. You mentioned the 1, 2, and 3 as the long shot possibilities. Is there any angle that you can disclose besides just a computer model that would make you interested in either of those horses?
Yeah, I think they're just horses that should close above what their odds suggest, right? So at those 12-1 to 15-1 lines, you know, morning lines, I'm not interested in it. But if they get to Kappa range, I mean, if they get to 30-1 or 40-1, then these are clear, I think, they can close for the win much more than expected. So that's the reason why, you know, I highlighted those
things. So it's more their running style?
Yeah. I mean, it's like it's one of these races where you have all logical speed, right? And all the price horses, kind of the closers, right? So you have these pace setups, but the pace setups are across many horses. So you might have people picking 1 or 2 of the
closers, and the third closer goes up at a much longer odds than possible. So I think it's one of those setups. The other horse that you both mentioned, the 10 horse Mosito, it has characteristics of a horse that the public's not going to like as much. So I think it might drift up, and you might get that value. So that's something that, you know, originally I didn't take a look at, but kind of listening to you guys, I'm probably going to pay more attention to how that the odds line on Mosito Rojo, you know, drifts. It's a barbell race for me. You know, morning line, like Chris mentioned, is lazy, is bad. I want to see how the public hammers the favorite or bets the long shots and act accordingly. That's you know, and it, on your question, Scott, about the long shots, it's really about if I'm getting, you know, the 30-1, I think these horses can win more than 3% of the time, right? It's one of these type of things.
Right. Cool.
So there is one long shot I like in here, I've been kind of focused on the 10 horse, but the 5 horse, Sir Anthony, is a horse I've made money on before. I think he's the best closer in the race. And, you know, he's 15-1 on the morning line, and he's about that on public handicapper. And I think the switch to James Graham will help him here. So to me, you know, Tony's right about the flow. If it does, end up favoring the closers, the 5 horse Sir Anthony is the one that I think could take advantage of that sort of a scenario.
Okay. So that wraps up our public handicapper races. Were there any other picks that either of you had? Well, I'll start with Tony. Is there any action elsewhere? Any horses that you want to alert anybody to?
It's all odds based, but I found it interesting that, you know, the public handicap races for Churchill is a 7th and 9th race. I actually do like the race right in between the 8th race. I think the number 1 horse, Scars Are Cool, is a pretty interesting betting proposition. Has a 5-1 morning line, but I think it should go off favored. I think it's the best horse in the field. So maybe the play for me, because I've analyzed these races much more than I ever would because I'm on the pod, maybe I'll connect Scars Are Cool to the 2 handicap races, you know, sandwiched outside of that. Only thing.
All right. Any other plays for you, Chris?
Not really. Although what I will just tell the listeners, I mean, the card at Belmont has some big names. It'll be fun to watch, but there's not a lot of good betting races. But if you look at the card, you know, the Churchill card's pretty good. Laurel has some good races, assuming you don't see a lot of scratches. Monmouth actually has some good racing tomorrow, and so does Gulfstream Park. So there's some very large, competitive, more interesting to bet races at some of the tracks outside of Santa Anita and Belmont, where the better horses are, but maybe not necessarily the best betting races. So from a betting standpoint, you might want to take a look at a few of those cards if you're interested in finding, you know, races that are a little more interesting and enticing to bet.
All right. Well, I guess that'll wrap up the pod for this week. Tony, thanks a lot for coming on the show. Great to hear your insight, and just hearing you talk about it makes me much more aware of my own value betting, and it helps even if I don't have the same computer model as you, I still have my opinions, and it informs my betting when I listen to you. And thanks for being on the show. And Chris,
thanks for having me.
Yeah, and do you have any final thoughts, Chris?
Well, I do want to thank Tony. It was really interesting being able to talk about his approach to the racing, and I think, you know, the listeners will get a lot of insight out of what he had to say. And, you know, I can't agree any more strongly about, you know, taking the value approach to making your wagering decisions. So again, thanks, Tony. That was very interesting and fun. And good luck to everybody out there this week. Breeders' Cup's right around the corner. Keeneland's coming up in next week.
Woohoo! All right, that's going to wrap up the PH Pod for this week. Thanks for listening, everybody. And please enjoy the Brooklyn Boogaloo Blowout.
Cheers.